The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
My name is Mark Pennell, and this session is How Becoming Risk Aware Clinician in School. Very simple topic. I'm going to show you how to become aware of risk and how your school benefits. That's a typical intro lane teacher thing, right? First of all, I just want to say thank you to ACCS for the opportunity to be here to speak to you. And also I want to thank you for attending. I know there's multiple choices. You can attend one of the other sessions. You can come golf this afternoon. You can take a tour of the baseball stadium, Hawkins Grove. So thank you for here. And a little bit about me. I'm a risk control specialist in school. All I do is do a little bit of risk control about 3 years now. Prior to being a risk control, I was a director of risk management for 20 years in public school district. The district is sized of about 60,000 students, from 4,000 students, another one around 29,000 students. So some very comprehensive school districts. Prior to that, I was in planning and insurance companies for 11 years, got the planning, a lot of municipalities, some school districts, and when we were in a component about planning and insurance companies, we also endured the almost like a who's who at the college. So afterwards, I can tell you things about Madonna, Jackson, and Harrison Ford, and all kinds of other stuff. Anyway, so that's me. And what we're actually going to cover, the goal is the basic principles of risk awareness. The focus is going to be on risk awareness and the role of how risk is awareness in the school. The goal. The goal is to identify potential hazards. And we're going to get into how you identify potential hazards, enhance awareness to your school staff, to the school, and help identify ways to reduce the potential for future hazards. The focus is going to be to be justifying solutions. You can always have somebody that can come in and say, you have to do this, and be unrealistic. So you get too much clutter, just build an extra wing. Oh, there's no problem. You know, we'll just come up with an extra $500,000. So it's a reasonable solution. And also to elaborate on why a hazard or a risk is something that's generally caused. If not, you'll have the definition of insanity. I'll give you one example. One time, someone with a bar muscle came in and in the classroom, the teacher this. It's a big classroom. The teacher had coolers up on one wall of the box, all the way to the ceiling. All kinds of hazards with that, fireproof, fire lighting, those stuff. So the bar muscle says, that's too hot. Go back 6 weeks later, we back, all the boxes are gone. Move them all that way. So unless you kind of elaborate on why it's a hazard, the definition of insanity can be just fundamental over and over again. The role, ways to communicate the findings to the school staff, implementing the findings. A lot of times you have, like, you ever had a great policy, but it never gets implemented well? So how can you implement risk awareness? And an administrator's interaction and feedback. Risk awareness. Knowledge that something exists or understanding of the situation. Knowledge that a situation or condition, something exists that exposes the school staff to danger of injury or loss. Isn't that kind of similar? It wasn't planned like that. I just thought it was two people put up there. So the first step is you have to define risk. I was going to use a joke, but every time I see Funkin' Bible, I was going to put a mayonnaise jar in the front porch. Anybody remember what that goes back to? Johnny Marston and Carnac, remember the, dating myself. That's a risk. What kind of risk are those? Lotto? Clock machine, well, what kind of risk? Financial risk. Maybe you gain, but nobody gets hurt. Basically, financial risk. That's a risk. What kind of risk is that? Yeah, especially skydiving without a parachute. insurance firm is watch the notes that an insured event will occur requiring the insurer to pay a claim. Different kinds of risks, the lines of coverage. This is the abbreviated list. You got work comp for employees, liability for students, property, fire, theft, earthquake, flood, surety, bond, pollution, USD, ADSD. How many people know what that abbreviation stands for? Underground service and above ground service. Aviation aircraft, auto, business interruption, and more importantly for the board administrators, director of D&O and Arizona Mission. But for today, we're going to focus in on the top three. Not necessarily the warrior, but principally in Pittsburgh, I decided I'd add this one, the Stanley Cup champions again. Quick quiz, how many people can name him? Sidney Crosby. You guys heard that, and I can look at that. I don't know who those people are either, I don't know if they're the top three players for the Pittsburgh team, so I'm from Pittsburgh. Well, I know that guy's the goalie. But for today, the top three, we're going to focus in on workers' comp, liability, and property. What kind of risk do you see in this photo? Basically, you see that there? That went on from here, and you never saw it. But basically, you can have the workers' comp and the liability. Also, if you see here, this is where the student actually used to sit. Just one more, boom, all down. See any risk in that, Bill, for these photos? Maybe some crooking hazard or something? What you don't see on this was actually a staff desk. And inside there is a portable station district. So, yeah, just a little bit of clutter. Anybody have any teachers that are like cat that have been in the top for 28 years and they've never thrown away a button from the deck? Obstacle. The obstacle to wide open distance. What is that right there? Wall paper. There is like a wall paper. All these photos you're going to see is just different. That when you're in the school, a lot of times what happens is stuff like that, stuff being the risk when it happens, you become walking. You just don't notice it anymore. It's just, wow, I'm glad you came in. I was expecting this to hear, I just didn't stop seeing it. The most common school risk in any school is trip and falls, screens, other, which we'll look here in a little bit, and then the signs. Signs, you have a high school. You have 3 through 8, or if you don't have high school, you probably don't have that much of a sign. Trip and fall. The most common accidents that people have are placement of electrical cords, stairs that have missing steps, or chip ditches, or drop-offs, improper area rugs in the classroom, drain ditches on the entry mat, uneven walking surfaces, wet slippery walking areas. This will show some examples here. Typical classrooms, couple school filters. What kind of danger, what kind of hazard, potential hazards is this right here, in this one? They don't want to protect their house and home, so they've got the AV part, they've got electrical cords. Could a teacher trip and get injured by that? So you have that work on potential. How about a student just walked off? And you've got a liability. You created that. How about property damage? Student or the teacher trip doesn't get injured. Takes the course with them, and you see that kind of gear and projector system. So you also have to think about the topic pattern. Additional, you see some of the extension cords, which are in proper use because they were old plugging, which we'll get into here in a minute. You also have to think the fire hazard system. Steps and stairs. The steps here, see the edges missing? Look at your planning while walking down the street on a trip. Look at your trip off. I don't know, there's something on the stairs. There's something that wasn't on the stairs, for the steps. Back in the loading dock area. You have the loading dock, truck comes up, the person is like waiting, come on in, come on in, come on in, drop right off. In can't meet that level. So what would you do here to kind of help increase the potential of something going on? Maybe like yellow toxin tape or bright orange or bright yellow tape, maybe that demand gets a heightened awareness of some potential that somebody could fall off. There is cancer then. I remember when I first started complaining, I asked my manager, I can't believe this person falls off. And this man, my clinic manager, the first lady, had said, Mark, we need to do some things. So even though it's there, you can only do so much before somebody doesn't pay attention. I remember one time when I was with one of the schools, we had a teacher that got severely injured, where they were walking from the parking lot into the classroom and they tripped on their untied shoelace. Are you supposed to have, okay, everybody, we're going to have a properly tied shoelace. And here are the steps. Same thing here. Common step, older building, built in the 30s, that is very common here. Just heightened some awareness. That if there's an accident, that someone gets injured, it's something with a liability, and they come to you for writing the big check, were you aware of the situation? And if you were, why weren't you aware? Or if you were aware of it, what did you do about it to prevent it? Now, you can't prevent the drop-off, you can't prevent this, but how can you reduce the potential of some type of losses? You might be aware of it, and now you're taking responsibility on the use of it. Typical classrooms with drugs. Hazard here, the way it was placed. That was a regular area rug. I think it's a piece of our own depot. And this here was a piece of carpet that I think was remodeled, brought it in. The problem with these pipes is that there's no rubberized backing. A lot of times, if you want to be supply, a lot of them will have a rubberized backing and they won't flip. This is a very common feature, most definitely in the classroom. And but one of the things that one of the students just did, only fuel supply drugs are allowed in the classroom. I know teachers have been done, but if they bring something in that creates a hazard like that, it's not going to allow. Great mask, typical entry mask going into the door, and no awareness right there. This is old, either this is repaired or possibly could be replaced. And over here, yeah, we got the shared carpet. And plus we got, I don't know if there was a leak, I don't know why you can see the waste basket. I don't know if there was a leak in the ceiling, but you have the shared carpet right there. Uneven walking surface. Again, right there is the concrete outside in the front. And the pavers over here, we have a little bit of a gap that creates over time. The general rule of thumb, uneven to concrete, is that most of the time, when is it uneven enough, and when is it just a little bit? The general rule of thumb is that if it's a half an inch, then you should maybe keep an eye on it, or you fill it and fill it in. You fill it in with some gravel type things or product like that. But with 3/4 of an inch, you maybe really should do something about it now. If it gets to an inch, you're required to do something. So a lot of times, if you have like older schools, you know, you know, where people live, they kind of see what's really great, but they didn't know that the type of roof that the street caused out of everything. So eventually, after about 30 years, they had to take out all those trees, redo all the concrete. But luckily, they did not replace the same kind of street. Slippery surfaces. Anybody, how many people get snow? So here's a custodian that is out one morning trying to clear. What is your snow policy? Or I could be ice, right? It could be ice. What is your ice policy? Just if there's no disrespect. Custodians come in early to be the first one there. If you walk around the school, does he cordon off where there could be ice? Does he communicate to everybody so that before they even come on there, hey, I've identified the ice that's placed out there. You can't be expected to remove all the ice. But what kind of policy do you have? And then the typical, oh, I slipped on something even though the sign was there. What kind of hazard are you seeing here? Anything Satan's wrong for saying what he said. There isn't. Not a fire code violation, not an OSHA violation. No hazard per se to put that out. That means you cut it. So if you go back, how did the teacher get up to the ceiling with me? Did she get on? And one of the times I was going through, this wasn't planned. It wasn't staged. I actually was going through the invitation at that point, and that's how we get up to the ceiling. So are they wearing? But can you just stand up here? I'm not going to ask you to stand on the table.
Okay, be fine.
So here we have a typical third grade teacher. Comes up around August, and she's going to decorate the school. And is she decorating it with these kind of shoes? I don't know if they're
really shoes. Yeah, probably. Flip-flops.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So thank you for doing that. So typically, teachers have what kind of costume you have on top of decorating the stuff on the ceiling. Different schools have different kind of programs. One, okay, it works really well with the custodian. The big before when you come in and they're an office, so coordinate the custodian will have a finding sheet. Okay, you want to talk about the ceiling, let them do that. I just decided to do the I know what cost of course where to do. I know how high I can only go on the ladder. I'm comfortable with ladders because I use it all the time. Or do you allow the teachers to do it on their own where they're standing on top of the chairs and desk and the other? And then you have a call hazard and significant claim. Screening. The most common type of screening claims are from overreaching, lifting, and moving on. The frequency from screens is, you know, this is manual for all schools. About 28% of all return claims are from screens. They account for about 30% of the money that's paid out, and lifting accounts for 45%. Overreaching goes on with any classroom, a lot of classrooms. Is this kind of typical what you would see with disorders? Not that typical. What about this up here? Storage is always an issue, right? It's kind of like the same thing with people. You know, you say you have to keep that in your coat, not all the things you're in, and within a year or two, it's like you still have to do the same thing with classes. You never seem to get enough storage. So what we have is that I'm going to ask this person right here. Can I ask you to stand up? You don't have to come up there and look at it. So she decides that, oh, I need to get this box right there. So she's standing on the chair in order to get that box. It all starts to fall down and she strains from touching it. So she's got a strain plan. Or something different than she's got. Or she slips on your fall box. Or it falls on the children and maybe regular suits that could be right underneath it. The same thing through here is that that fam, I think it's the fam, not too stable on it. So while we either if they fall, because it won't take much for that stuff to fall, or as they catch it, all that weight down there can cause a strain. Lifting. How many of you have your teachers train on proper lifting? How many people have any school teachers actually lift them? They all do. You may not think so, they all lift one thing or another. Is there a maximum weightlifting guideline? You know that before, especially at the beginning part of school, maybe for Christmas break and they're bringing in new stuff and trying to set up, they have all the stuff piled in the car, they're going to bring it, or at the end of school year, after taking it back home or something, they're looking at all those heavy boxes and material. Do they coordinate with the custodians? Just like decorating in there, if they have a bunch of stuff in their car, they're moving around and they decorate, are they coordinating with the custodians? Safety ladder, possibly. Do you have that for lifting? Is there a shoe policy? As we're playing out here, nice shoe policy, like this. Moving objects. Typical just in the classroom, they're moving furniture, they're moving artwork, they get into school, they got all this stuff, they're trying to carry four or five boxes at one time, and they seem to be able to carry one, the possible use of the utility parts to come in, instead of overloading it. Some of the tools or suggestions about your system, like here, okay, instead of one person, you're actually, that's a good example right here, you're using the budget system. Push, don't pull. Pushing is a lot less of a hazard or risk than if it's pull. Utility parts, hand trucks and dollars are every tool that you use. If it's reminded, you know that you have to stop the tool, don't pull the load. Better to take three trips than two. Better to take two trips than just one. And if somebody got it all stacking up there in one fall and they caught it, but then all that big damage is caused to bring. Lifting straps, that's another possible, especially in the winter. How many people know what lifting straps are? So you kind of put them in there and you kind of look at what's going on. Other ones, the miscellaneous ones. Too high of storage, as we saw in those other photos. Falling object, which actually could be a strike or struck. TVs on parking security. Grounding plug is missing. Daisy chain. So you got electrocution, you got fire, electrocution. Horse placed under a rug. Fire, damage to the horse. Improper extension cord. Classroom and door decorations. Oh, that's a favorite elementary school, isn't it? The elementary school teachers love to decorate the doors and everything. We'll get into some photos. This, more or less, is called classroom management for teachers. And they go through training, they get certification, desks and chairs and backpacks, how many rangers, and you have a order. Typical handling, contamination, which we'll get into here. Paper cutters. Everybody got paper cutters in their school? Little guillotines. Or a guillotine for little finger and an metal. TV cart. Especially the old tube cart. Pretty heavy. About 200 pounds or so. They move it on the cart, they hit something, tips over, they try and catch it. So they're actually required to be properly secured. The most common used method is those big straps, tight end straps, or sometimes they can actually bolt it underneath. And if that person falls into a third grader, it's going to be condemned. It's going to have a significant injury. Electrical cords without the problem there. Not every electrical device has the first grounding cord. But if it's there, it's got to be there. If it, a lot of times they just fall out, they get left in the wall outlet. So with something like that, that raises the potential for an electrocution. All the best is electrical cords. Both of these show a couple, multiple types of hazards here. One, the orange extension cord. Let me talk for a second about improper extension cords. One that you cannot have in the tool. It's what's called the hazard type. The white ones, the brown ones, sometimes the green. Those are not allowed in the workplace whatsoever. Okay. The orange ones, those are allowed. But after we get done using it, we're supposed to unplug it. These, in this scenario, we were always plugged in all the time. That's considered permanent wireless. So that's just a little code type thing. And then you have daisy chaining. You have the brown one that's plugged into the white one that's going underneath the cord that's going to the power strip that then is going to the wall. Anytime you have like a power strip, then that has to go directly into the wall. Or if you have an extension cord, proper one, that has to go into the wall. Then you have one plugged into another, So you have one plugged into another and into another, that's called the daisy chain. That there's a fire marshal regulation and those, but more importantly to you, that could be a fire hazard right there. But none of the electrical cords can be covered with rubber, because it increases the heat and that can cause either the cord to melt and damage the cord and possibly the computer device, or it can cause a fire. Classroom decorations. Always a fun topic when you start with the elementary school staff. Typical classroom, one exit. So you're going to cover your fire exit door with nothing but flammable material. But they always have to, you know, I decorated because it looks good. in most cities and most regulations, you cannot have flammable material on the floor. Okay. Now, those little flowers and kind of things like that, if they were laminated, I used to say, hey, get the flowers, put it on there, laminate, and put them on the door, that's fine. Okay. You know, you want to have some stuff on the door, that's fine. But don't have the whole door covered in flammable material. Because you can have a fire that's going through, and this particular school is no sprinkler, so if you get up a fire, it's going to go through fairly quick. And if you have a delayed evacuation, that might neutralize all of it, and you're increasing the fire, you're going to get the fire damage. Classrooms, the walls inside the classroom, most of these have regulations about 25%, from 20 to 30%. In this case, the blackest paper, the best paper, the green paper, so just a temporary amount, which reduces the fire hazard, and since we have to increase the fire. Paper cutters, one of my favorite topics. This is a modern one that has all the guards on it. This one here, as you can tell, there's no finger guard, and there's no cover right there. Here's one with the finger guard. And this actually has the spring guard. Most paper cutters, it kind of has the way of cost. If you look at an old car from the 60s or on, no seatbelt, no airbag, you know, none of that. So in the 60s and the 70s, they started to add the finger guard, much the same way that cars added the seatbelt. In the late 70s and the 80s, they started adding the lap, which actually is a change seat here. And that's when they added up in cars in the silver stuff. And in the 80s and the 90s, when cars was the airbag, then they added the spring guard. So to have paper cutters, they're all required to have three of the main guards. The spring guard is just a little plastic thing that the spring has a tendency to spring out, hit somebody in the face. The finger guard, absolutely. And then you have like the latch, which is just plastic. Another, this is just a recommendation, or not a recommendation, just a suggestion, too, before we have to cover. Never have paper cutters in the classroom. Usually there's a prep area somewhere, put them in the prep area. Now, if you have in high school, if you may have an art class or something, or it's part of the curriculum, okay, that's fine. You're dealing with somebody high school as a student. But in elementary, I see them in first grade and second grade, and, put your hand in here. And you have a huge liability problem. So it's always best to keep them in the structure. Then also, a general rule of thumb, if a paper cutter is missing one guard, it's easy to find that one guard and add it. If it's missing two of the three, it's a lot cheaper to go in and get the started, and then you get a new one. Then the fit in the replica is good. Here's a tool that I'm going to go to the next page and then come back. These numbers along here will point out, like right here, 17. Existing cords may not be extended from one classroom to another. And on here, these little black dots, those are numbers that are referenced on the next page. I have this. This comes from the LA Unified School District. School district in, well, for LA. I have this as a PDF on PDF. I can't print it out to you because it's on here. But if you email me, and I have a couple of my business cards from the last page of the contract, if you email that, I can just email PDF to PDF, and basically kind of cover everything that we just kind of went through. It's a real good guide for platform safety. As you can kind of tell in here, the unstable storage, the extension cords going underneath, the daisy chain, blocking the excess, again, excess storage, things like that. So it's really good tool that you can kind of show to your teachers and you kind of help as far as that guidelines. Science. People in the serious room in all of the school, it's going to be your high school science. The most common ones are unlabeled beakers with handwritten labels, and refrigerator not properly labeled. No documentation on the first fume code. The IWAP station doesn't get kept up. No lift on the shelf, improper storage. I can tell you really quickly about my old story on refrigerator not properly labeled. When I was in Plains, one of the other things that we served was a lot of fast food places, from Burger King, Del Taco,
Problem with handwritten
they will disappear. Any kind of different water, moisture in the air will have it burn and disappear. And sometimes, I can do this for some time. Well, but what is it? Then you have another problem. Lift. You always want to have with all the chemicals like that. A little lift on the shell. So in case you fall over, it won't roll over and roll off and hit the floor. And that's usually a standard kind of requirement too. Here's a refrigerator. Very easy solution. Just label it. Food only, no science stuff. Science stuff only, no personal food. Very simple. Get on a word, print it out, put a fancy tip on it, and then just put it up there. Fuel. It's in a flammable cabinet. In a milk jar. I don't think that's the problem. I don't have a science degree in chemistry. But I don't think that's the proper source yet. And all these components, by the way, are taken from food. So you go through and you have all the stuff that you find. We got about 10 minutes. Got it. Creates the opportunity to address the risk awareness to all the staff. One possible approach is that share it as an educational tool, maybe the principal has a meeting with the staff. Here's everything I can obtain on. Here's how we can kind of correct it. What suggestions do you have? Another opportunity to staff on email, maybe the photos. Because while I've got more than one tool, maybe the thing up here can be another. The most significant risk any tool faces is a lack of action when the hazard becomes heard. Once you use the dog with 135, first in the room that you hear is right all the time. Stop fighting, didn't know it did. Now you do that. Now you're expected to do something about it. So the same thing there. Once you find there's a hazard, so now that you've attended this session, you don't have any of those excuses anymore, I didn't know. Right? Awareness is the key. So here are some suggestions on meeting types. Before you probably come up in August, obviously you have back to school, things like that. New employer, teacher orientation. In-service days, in-service week, during the school year, maybe the principal staff meeting, regular in-service days, and sometimes with the high school, maybe by department. The department will get together, something like that. It's just a way that we fund it. Benefits. Encourage teachers and staff in discussions that affect your safety. Open it up, and we want to hear from you. We want to see what happens to you. Administration's commitment and employee involvement prevents them of accidents, reduces money, direct and indirect. So it's indirect that, okay, teacher gets injured, he's going to be out for 3 weeks. Okay, the lost wages that the employees have worked on is being met in medical care. Indirect, that worker's comp is not paid for. You got to trust your teacher, that's all on you guys. So that's part of the indirect additional cost. Identify problems and solutions. Reveal training needs. And address administration's concerns. Now, all of these are going to equal going to affect your budget. Lower work comp training, lower liability training. How many people know what that is? And it's under shows administration's concerns. If you Google warm fuzzy, that's what comes up. Google warm fuzzy image, and that's what comes up. When I first started with this angle, it's very important that I reported to the 52% of HR, and he always dropped that was the business man, the business superintendent. And I said, well, it doesn't make sense to don't do it, it's not possible. So I recognize that as part of HR, but you've got to do a lot of warm fuzzing and say, hey, why do you hear about the safety, participation? So that's the administration that's the warm fuzzing part. Tools and checklists. So, okay, what kind of tools do I have to kind of help fund these kind of hazards? Here, this is just one that we have. We hear, I think, about a fourth of all the EPA tools. This is just a safety inspection checklist. I got about two at the end. You can leave me off. I can show you where the link is, and then even if you're not going to look up, you can just print it out on your own. It's a good checklist. It's a good starting point. The only disadvantage that we need, and just any maintenance company, single thing, but all the coffee tasting jars are going very quickly. And that's a good question. Here's a paper cutter. How many people before this knew that all the coffee tasting jars? Things like that. But anyway, so I've got one here, less than I got two here. Emailing, I can see some more. And this is my contact information. And I think I have a couple of business cards. And I think we've got about 345. I think we've got maybe about 3 to 5 minutes for questions. Okay. Any questions?
I don't do sales. I just do business. I sell people from all the places.